Hi, this is Michael Gonzalez, writer from Complex.com, and you're listening to Heritage Radio. Hi.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's June 26, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Tonight I'm joined by a room full of amazing beer people, including Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger.
Hey, Jimmy.
How are you, Dave?
I'm doing great.
Dave, did you make it up to the festival in Massachusetts this past weekend?
I did not. I almost made it. My ride came down to pick me up, but we're doing that new pub up in Vermont, and we were in the middle of interviewing a bunch of people, so I couldn't get in the car.
Well, I'll say it must have been one of the most wonderful gatherings of small brewers that's ever happened in America. And first, we'll give thanks to the Shelton brothers who helped organize that with 12%. We got Joel Shelton here. How are you, Joel?
I'm great.
Joel, how did the festival go? It was such an amazing idea. All of my favorite brewers were there. What were some of the highlights and some of the beers that you would like to share with us?
We're going to share our new brewery, Freigeist, in a little while, but the highlight was that the customers were really happy. It was a really civilized crowd for a beer fest. I think everyone agreed. Everyone commented on that. And the brewers themselves were saying it's great people. They really know about beer. They're asking good questions. And I think the people that came felt the same way about the brewers. It wasn't a big beer blast at all. It was really informative and some of the best beer in the world in one room.
Well, first we'll give a shout out to our sponsors, greatbrewers.com. You can learn more about beer, test your beer IQ, and check out the Beer Cloud, a mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers, all on greatbrewers.com. And we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal. Check out goodbeerseal.com. July Good Beer Month is coming up. There's 40 New York City beer bars, all at thegoodbeerseal.com. All right, so Joel Shelton's here with the guys from Freigeist, Sebastian and Peter. How are you guys?
We are fine. Thank you.
You know, you've got a loaded room. You got Dave Broderick, Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger, B.R. Royer from Shelton Brothers, Ted Kinney from Top Hops, and Dave Yarrington, a great brewer from Smutyanose in New York. So welcome to New York.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what do you want to say to us, Sebastian? I know you speak German. I know you speak English.
Yeah, what do you want?
Speak in German.
I should choose German?
Yes, please.
Okay. Es ist wirklich sehr schön, hier zu sein. Wir trinken gutes Bier. Alles gut?
Good.
Jimmy, do you get me?
Now Peter can translate. Peter, tell us.
I actually even knew what he said on that. All is good. We're drinking good beer.
Nur die Blutwurst.
The reason I'm so excited that you're here is that, you know, there's so much going on with German breweries. You get sales slips about saying, we've got 1 million hectoliters sales, the most beer ever sold in Germany. And I know that that's not what German beer culture is, and it never was to me. And I always think of it as the small local breweries with regional styles. You know, last week we had Stefan Mikkel, the brewer from Mars, at a special dinner. And you guys here are like the new German, to us you're the new German breweries. Tell us, how do you feel about what you're doing? Do you feel like you're different? Do you feel like you're part of a new scene in Germany? Do you feel like you're like the guerrilla underground, like Stefan does at Mars?
We actually feel a bit like the new scene, so we pretty feel much connected to the craft beer scene, which is going on all over the world, and we are pretty good connected with a lot of breweries and places in Europe which are doing the new scene. So we're not the very traditional ones, but we get a bit of take on some traditional stuff. So we love historical beer styles, and especially because they are dying out in Germany, we try to revive them and have a new and modern take on those.
At Ted Kinney from Top Hops, a great new bottle shop in Lower East Side, Manhattan. Do you carry any of the specialty German breweries like Mars?
We've been trying to get Mars in. We're out of stock the last time I tried to order it, but we've got I've actually just started looking into getting some of the more esoteric German brews in now, because basically we've got, you know, Schneiderweiss and Weinstephaner that everybody else has been able to get for a long time. So trying to get some other things that are, that maybe you can't find in a lot of other bars and restaurants out there.
Great. Dave?
Yeah, and I'd kind of be curious, like, how do the traditional German brewers view the new scene that's going on? I mean, how do they feel about it? They are, you know, usually pretty conservative, and they're following a very, very old tradition of the way they think it should be done. So how do they look upon you guys?
They really don't understand what we are doing, so yeah. That's a difficult thing. So there's a lot of dying out of the breweries in Germany. So Germany used to have a lot of breweries, and nowadays it's really going down, and they all produce less than a lot of years ago. And but they don't understand why they lose so much. They see themselves as a victim, and just say, okay, we brew the best beer possible, so why don't they drink it? And
yeah,
they're not like, okay, we probably have to put some new stuff on, and that consumers can taste some other stuff and just get a different view on the beer, and not like, okay, I have my regular lager which I can drink out of a mug. And
yeah, because I don't they sort of look, the young German, you know, beer drinker kind of looks at the traditional beers as sort of their grandfather's beer and their parents' beer, and they're switching to other things. Is that sort of what's going on? That why these other breweries are sort of dying off, these more traditional breweries?
Yeah, a bit true, but it's also a question of the price. So they are not very connected with the breweries. It's not a bit the slow food thinking, that you want to know the hands which are making your products, and that they are connected with their local butcher, their local bakery. So that's also a problem with other producers. But and concerning beer, it's also the same problem, so that they are not going for the local stuff, or which is really good, but just like, okay, this case costs €5 less than the other case, so I'm going to take the cheaper one. Not because it's better or there are better ingredients inside, but it's just like, okay, it's cheaper.
So who are your customers in Germany? Who's gravitating towards this, like, new scene?
We just have a brew pub, where we are going to where we are brewing, and so we can put all the beers we are producing there. But outside of this pub, we're not selling to any other places in Germany. So we're just exporting to Italy, to Spain, to the US. And that's very important for us, because people appreciate it a lot, and we don't have to force to get our beers to sell. So it's like we don't want to run behind other people and just like, please buy this beer, it's nice, taste it, or whatever. Just like the Italians came around and it's just like, please, we want to have as much as possible from that beer, and that's fine for us.
So you're more famous in America than you are in the rest of Germany, besides the town where you actually probably
grew. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Stefan had a good story. I mean, Sebastian had a good story last night about the brewery in Cologne that called you guys when there was a story saying this is the center of beer in Germany now, and they mentioned Freigeist, our Braustelle, as the real center of beer, and one of the larger Kölsch breweries wasn't happy about this, and they gave you guys a call and actually said, what the hell is this all about?
They didn't understand really what it was about, so they didn't understand the article. It was just like, the small brewery should be the center of the new scene, and it was like, we should be the center of the new scene, and no, you're...
It's a very conservative atmosphere there. Yeah.
So what happened? So German breweries, what, they just got so good with the technology and production that they feel like they're making pure, clean beers that the world should buy? I mean, so they really think they're making the best beers?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. They are pretty good in the high-end brewing. So about the, what you said, about the... Yeah, you can study brewmaster and stuff like that. So a lot of beer people from other countries are going to Germany for studying to be brewmaster. And this is really good. But next to it, the brewing scene is still the same like years ago. So it never developed, but it was still the same. They are not producing some new stuff. Now it's changing a bit, but not that much.
So you're making beers in Cologne, the heart of Kölsch. We know Kölsch beers come from there, and there's, what, over 20 different Kölsch producers? How many Kölsch producers are there now? We know Reisdorf, we know Gaffel,
they're not that much. So there's a big concern which produce a lot of different brands, but they're all made at the same brewery, and you're not able to put or you're not able to say if they are separately brewed or not, because they taste all the same.
Yeah.
So just like find it out on your own.
What are you guys doing differently? So tell us some of the beers that you brought, because I'm drinking your Kolsch, which is really good.
Thank you.
And what other beers did you bring today?
We have the special stuff on the Kolsch is that it's unfiltered, so we are not able to call it Kolsch in Cologne, because it has to be completely filtered, so it has to be clean. And that's what we are not doing in our brew pub, and this is something special. So,
you can't even call your Kolsch a Kolsch?
True, yeah, because it's not filtered. But we keep all the important stuff in the beer, and it's much more hoppy and more flavorful than the other beers, which are, for our taste, more watery and
is that what I'm drinking right now, this beer? The blue label? What is that?
That's a Braxis. That's a smoked Berliner Weisse. So it contains lactic sourness and smoked malt. And we also brought Weizen, Rheinland Weizen, so it's not brewed with a Weizen yeast, but with a Kölsch yeast, so it's not that sticky and banana taste and the cloves, but more hop-dominated. And then we also have Hoppeditz, which is a strong Altbier, a bit like a Doppelsticker, which is known in Düsseldorf.
So you're making, you have a small brew, are you brewing at your own brew pub?
Yeah, we are brewing at our brew pub, but for the U.S. Market, we are brewing at a different plant, because we're not able to make that big quantities for the American market.
And so you're making like traditional styles of beer?
Yeah, but at this other plant, it's totally our ingredients and our recipes, so that's very important for us.
So, Joel, how did you guys at Shelton Brothers discover the Freigeist?
Several of our people met these guys at beer festivals, I think in Belgium mostly, correct?
Yeah.
And there aren't too many Germans going to Belgian beer festivals, so they're pretty noticeable. So Dan and I heard from a few people, and Dan met Sebastian before, that we should go talk to these guys seriously and see about doing business. And we sat down last summer and had a bunch of beers, and it took us about 5 seconds to realize we should be bringing this stuff in. And it took us much longer to get the labels done and the beer actually in America. But we're very excited. It's here today for the first time. In New York is the premiere.
Well, cheers to that.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Welcome, new friends. Small German breweries. We'll toast to that.
Cheers,
yes. And Dave, I know Jen's here. We're going to take a short break. But Jen, you've been to Bamberg recently.
Yes, I have.
Get Jen on. Come on. Jen Swerdman from Blind Tiger.
Hi. In this room, talking over Dave's shoulder here into a mic, we can talk about that.
There's
in detail.
Almost 10
These
people.
Guys are fascinating what they're doing. I'm really interested, and I'm so happy to meet them. And hear about this, because this is something that I've talked about Germany and how it's one of the the Belgians started to get a little creative, the British started to crane their necks and pay attention to what we were doing over here and taking influence from our IPAs and things, and yet the Germans were still the slow ones to even like acknowledge. So here these guys are doing what I've kind of been waiting for from Germany for a while. It's fun.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, I tell you, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Well, it took me a woman late last night. I was 3/4 drunk. She looked all right. Till she started peeling off her onion gook. She took off her wig, said, "How do I look?" I was high flying, bare naked, out the window. Well, sometimes I might get drunk, walk like a duck and smell like a skunk. Don't hurt me, none of don't hurt my pride, 'cause I got my little lady right by my side. She's a trying to hide, pretending she don't know me. I was out there painting on the old woodshed when a can of black paint, it fell on my head. I went down to scrub and rub, but I had to sit in back of the tub. Cost a quarter. Half price. While my telephone rang, it would not stop. It's President Kennedy calling me up.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick. It's a beautiful day in June. And I got so many people in this room. We've got Fry Guys, Shelton Brothers, Blind Tiger, Smutty Nose Brewer, which is coming up soon, and the new guy, it's Ted Kenny, who used to work at Anheuser-Busch, so he knows everything about big beer and selling a lot of beer. And he chose to open a very small, very hip bottle shop in Lower East Side, Manhattan, and Florence Fabricant, you might have heard of her from the New York Times, when she reviewed the store, she said, an arms race seems to have sprung up among the new breed of beer stores in New York. Which, because he says he has 700 beers. But separate from that, you're coming from Anheuser-Busch. You're doing, you know, small brands, really great selection. What do you think about, we met with the guys from Fry Guys. They're the new small breweries from Germany. What do you want to say about that? Because you'll probably carry Fry Guys in your store, won't you?
Absolutely. These guys are, you know, it's great to meet these guys. The beer is delicious. And, it's got such, you know, an amazing flavor. And it just, you know, it hits your tongue and it's just pop. One of the things that we were just talking about how these guys were saying that there were, you know, the brewers in Germany, they don't seem to get that people are looking for something different, something that's not being offered to them. And we were just commenting on how the same thing happened, you know, here where, you know, everyone was just, it had boiled down to just a few suppliers that were all supplying basically the same beer. And it's been so great to, you know, be in New York at a time when the market is just exploding and we're getting to taste great beer from all over the world. And that's when I decided to get out of AB and go up my own place because, you know, it's just such a great time to be able to get that out there. And in New York, you know, there were always some great, there were some really great beer bars, including Blind Tiger and a number of other places. But there just weren't that many places to buy beer to take home. And that's what got me thinking, you know, that's coming from being at AB, you know, where more than 90% of their market is the take-home market, not the on-premise market. So that's what got me thinking that way.
All right, man. Well, welcome aboard.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's still, there's so many great people in this country working in the beer industry, and there's a lot of really cool craft beer people. One of them is B.R. Roya from Shelton Brothers. I always ask her what's going on because she knows. I mean, you had the festival up in Massachusetts this weekend. So many great brewers. How did you guys do that? I just can't believe there was all my favorite brewers were in Massachusetts, and I didn't go.
Everyone except you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how we did it. I'm still recovering. But it was fantastic. We had over 70 brewers, cider makers, and mead makers. And the requirement to attend was that your brewer actually had to be there. We didn't want some sales rep or, you know, the export manager or whatever. I mean, most of our brewers are so small, they don't even have that sort of staff. But we wanted the actual brewer there to be able to talk about their beers and their ciders. And actually, the brewers themselves found it wonderful because they were able to, in a much smaller setting than, say, CBC, talk to their peers. And I mean, it was just fantastic, actually, just to taste all the beers and meet all the brewers if I hadn't, you know, we haven't met them before. And
so, name some of the brewers and their breweries, and you'll probably tell me my favorite brewers.
We had the big names that everyone ran to, like Cantillon, of course, Jean Vanois was there, Mikkel from McKellar, Ron Jeffries made it out from Jolly Pumpkin, which everyone was very excited about. Some of our European brewers are just starting to experiment with barrel aging, so they were all just super excited to be able to talk to him about barrel aging. Then we had the new Freigeist. We had some very small producers from who aren't really well known yet in the U.S. Cider makers from Normandy came and they brought some of their Calvados, Cidre du Perche in Normandy. There were just so many. I can't even name them all and all the highlights.
It's always amazing to me how many great small brewers you guys have at Shelton Brothers. How do you guys do it? I mean, we've got, you know, stores like Top Hops and bars like Blind Tiger and Jimmy's. We're always trying to get your product. And there's always a new brewery. I mean, Joel, what are your brothers doing and how do you keep it going? I mean, how can you have so many different small brewers?
We're barely maintaining, Jimmy. It's, as we've heard, we're not in stock with Mars in a certain shop, for example. It's tricky because we don't order a huge volume at any one time because we don't sell to everybody. It's just some good shops or some good bars. So we run out on occasion. But we keep them going because they don't need to sell tons of beer to the States. They just need to sell a little bit here and there to the people that want it. And we have a million brewers, and that keeps us going. If we only had two, we wouldn't survive, obviously.
How many brewers do you have?
BR, do you know? We don't really know because it keeps changing. We had one more now than we had last week, but I think it's something like 70 or
yeah, that 80. Sounds about yeah. I think it's around 70.
It shouldn't be too hard to count them, but we just never did.
And then for our listeners, what's the process? So you met Fry Guys. What's the process that takes it from meeting Fry Guys to getting them to be distributed in the States?
It's actually not that complicated. We just make it complicated, I think. But literally,
I think you guys do.
Well, yeah, because Dan doesn't. My brother Dan doesn't want to make a decision, pretty much. But we sat down. We tried the beer and we said, "You want to bring it to the States?" Yes. How much is it? Okay, that'll work. And then we have to sign a few papers. And that's really what it would take. But it ended up taking 11 months with these guys because we had to make new labels, for example. And we're not a huge company and we take our time. Basically, we're just not that efficient sometimes. But there's the beer. The beer's great. And we're trying to get a little more professional. And hopefully Fry Guys will be in stock all the time.
And how many states are you guys in now? Like Shelton Brothers, like how many do you distribute to?
Do you know?
I think we're probably in about 46 or so right now. It's changing a little bit in terms of distributors. You know, we're adding some and taking away from others depending on if they actually have a commitment to our beers. I mean, some people bring in a brand and then don't ever order it again. So we like to work with distributors who see our philosophy of helping the little guys and who are willing to work with us on pricing, you know, so that they're not gouging the consumers on the pricing and work with us on smaller margins, because the lower the prices are, the more people are going to buy the beer, the more we can order from the breweries, the more the breweries produce, and it's really a win-win situation for everyone. So we try to work with our distributors to get them not to take, like, say, crazy margins. And hopefully, I mean, we can't always, you know, work with the accounts on the end, but, you know, hopefully they're selling to people who are also not going to.
I'll tell you that the festival is really exciting because you brought so many brewers to this region. And I know last Thursday we had Stefan from Mars. Are there any other special events going on, BR, with some of your brewers this week?
I believe the only one is tonight at Spuyt & Duyvil. We'll have the debut of the Fry Guys. We'll have six of their beers on draft and some in bottles as well.
So we're going over there after the show.
And on Saturday, we actually have Mikkeller and Two Ull, two Danish breweries, along with Evil Twin, will be there at Beer Street over in Williamsburg.
Excellent. All right. Dave, anything you want to say about the new German breweries or the small brewers from Shelton?
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering, because it just makes me think that, you know, the fact that they Fry Guys ship so much to America and they're actually probably going to wind up being better known here, at least with a larger number of people. So it is that kind of that idea of in your own country, you have to build up that clientele and getting young people or anybody, getting them excited about, you know, which we had to do starting in the late 80s and stuff, getting people excited here. It's like, how, you know, do you guys think about that in terms of building up a German clientele, you know, so that you have it at home as well as, you know, here abroad?
Yeah, definitely. We just want to, we discussed this yesterday evening in your pub, actually, that it's totally important that people are able to get our beers in Germany too. So we don't want to make special batches which are just available in some other countries and our local people are not able to get it. But at least we are just see ourselves as a brewery, and we are not beer journalists and beer teacher and beer missionaries or whatever. It's just like we work a lot, and we are not able to make more as possible. So we make once a year a beer festival where we invite a lot of good friends, breweries, that they come around and people can come and participate and taste a lot of beers, and then there is a limit. So we are not able to do much more, travel around through Germany and give people the taste and some samples. It's just like the people have to be waking up by themselves or by other people. So I think it's not the something which you have the brewery have to do. So it's like we try to, and we if people in Germany are starting to think different and ask us, we will definitely help. But until then, we still have to see that we can work on our own stuff as well. So if we want to do something special, like the Gose, we published at the Shelton Brothers Festival. People loved it in the US. It's quite hard to sell it in Germany, so why should we try to force people to drink it in Germany when other countries...
send it where people want it.
Yeah, go crazy about it in other countries. It's like...
Yeah, I mean, and so... I mean, what was I going to say? I mean, the whole idea of, you know, getting young people and stuff and you know, do you have beer bars in Germany that are sort of, you know, similar to what we have here?
Nope.
To help push it? Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, because that's kind of where it starts. You know, it's not, you like you say, it's not the brewery's job necessarily to educate people.
Yeah, normally it's also the beer pubs and the beer shops. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I had some thoughts about opening a beer bar next to our brew pub some time ago, and it didn't work out. But it's like...
Sebastian, how about you let me taste a different beer?
Okay.
And then quickly, with you and Peter, how did you guys get started? If you know, you're like the I don't know, gorillas or, you know, mavericks. We'd say mavericks here. How did you get started 10 years ago doing a small brew pub in Cologne?
Just like we love good stuff. And we always traveled around through Belgium and other countries. And we're open-minded, so we love to try a lot of different beers. And we fell in love with Lambic, with IPAs, with whatever. And we don't want to copy beer styles, but want to have a special take on some inspiration from different breweries, but still want to do it on a separate way. You don't want any of our beers again.
I spilled the beer.
Jimmy. Oh, my God.
Damn you.
Everybody's perking up. Well, Sebastian. And also, in the next segment, Dave Yarrington's here, the brewer from Smarty Nose. And he's going to tell you a little bit about what he's gone through in American craft brewer. And
yep, been there. Done it. Educated people. The whole process. I mean, I've been doing this about 18 years now. And, you know, it's amazing how far America has come. And, you know, it's interesting to see that all sort of taking root in Europe. At, you know, especially as Americans seeing, you know, all the styles that we've sort of based a lot of our breweries on, you know, coming back to Europe and people being excited about the American take on it. So, you know, it's really exciting to meet you guys and sort of hear your perspective on all that.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
I used to smoke, drink, and that's the hoochie coo. I used to smoke and drink. Smoke and drink, and that's a hoochie-coo. Oh, yeah. But now I'm standing on this corner praying for me and you. That's why I'm saved. I'm saved. People, let me tell you about a kingdom come, you know I'm saved. I'm saved. I cannot preach unto you. Deaf and dumb, I'm in that soul-saving army. I used to cuss, I used to fuss, I used to cuss, fuss, and boogie all night long. I used to cuss and fuss, and boogie all night long. But now I'm standing on this corner, I know right or from wrong. That's why I'm saying.
Hey, Kay, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Here we are, Roberta's in Bushwick. We got Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, and the guys from Fry Guys, and Ted from Top Hops.
How you doing?
How are you? And our special guest is Dave Yarrington, a longtime brewer, American craft brewer. We all respect him from Smutty Nose up in New Hampshire. Dave, we've been talking about small German breweries and all the challenges you go through creating craft beer out of a macro environment. Let's say hello. We've been waiting to have you on the air for a long time.
Yeah, thanks for having me down. It's been, what, a couple years or longer?
We've been begging.
Yeah, it's hard to get me in New York. It's so difficult.
We had to bribe him. We'd take him to, you know, Wally Dufresne's restaurant tonight. It's the only way we can get him here.
And it worked. Yeah, thank you. So, this has been an interesting conversation because, you know, I'm looking at it from the other viewpoint where it took us a long time, said earlier, to kind of build up the clientele in America and really getting people on board. And, you know, it's exciting to see, you know, German and European brewers in general sort of taking some inspiration from that and really seeing that, you know, you can be creative and you can do unique things and people will respond. You know, it's about quality and passion and, you know, all those attributes that, you know, people respond to really well. So these beers are beautiful. Thank you for sharing with us. They're great.
Thank you.
What was the last beer you poured, Sebastian? A little darker?
That's Hoppet. It's a strong alt beer. So we used 5 kind of malts and 5 kind of hops for brewing it, and it's something like a Doppelsticker, which is known in Düsseldorf, which is in former times was meant a secret, so the brewer made a bit stronger beer, and people just get to know when they drink it. And
I'd love to hear more about Abraxas. I don't know if you mind geeking out on it, but where's the lacto? Like, where do you add the lactobacillus into that? Is that like in a kettle or in the fermenters or
before fermentation? Actually,
yeah, okay. Do you get nervous about like contamination of your other beers with the lactobacillus, or
it's lactic acid? It's not.
Acid. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So we have open fermentation, so it's not the best thing to work with bacillus. So
yeah, because I was thinking you were working with lactobacillus, but lactic acid. Interesting. I mean, it's beautifully blended. That's a gorgeous beer.
Thank you.
And the smoked malt is a smoked malt you're using there.
That's a very old German brewing technique. So it's called Lichtenhainer, which is just easy said as a bit or close to a smoked Berliner Weisse. It's actually not that the same, but it's pretty easy description, and it's very important to have the combination of sour and smoked malt in one beer.
I think the interesting thing about Freigeist is not that they're doing something freaky and new, but they're actually doing something freaky with an old style that's a German style that people don't realize. Germans had really sour beer not long ago, and that's what's really fascinating about those guys.
But the lactic acid wouldn't have been a traditional additive. I mean, it would have been a bacteria at some point, right?
Yeah, but it was not. It was a bit an accident, I would say.
Yeah,
so
probably.
The breweries weren't so clean, so they had a lot of infection stuff, and that's how they got the Brettanomyces and lactic acid.
There's a lot of American breweries doing it by mistake too, I think.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
Don't talk with us about the subject with the Belgians. So.
No. And actually, I wanted to ask Dave. He's actually had to educate in 2 different countries because he brewed in Japan for a while, and that was before Smutty.
Yeah, directly before Smutty. I lived in Tokyo for about 3 years. I went over there because my brother had spent in total about a decade over there, and I mostly wanted just to visit him and see what his life was there, because it was pretty obvious he had sort of moved there permanently. And so he invited me over with some friends of his who were living in Tokyo to try to start a brewing company. And we were able to get a beer contracted that I was, well, we call it gypsy brewing, I guess now, but there wasn't that term back then. But I was brewing it with a local brewery, Sant Gallen, and then we were able to sell it around Tokyo. It's called Tokyo Ale. We were trying to do a brew pub, but, you know, it's those economics of you know, urban real estate that got in the way of trying to do a real brew pub in Tokyo. I'd loved it there. In fact, if I had gotten a brew pub going, I'd sure I'd still be living there. Of course, wouldn't have known you guys, or maybe in a different context. But that was really interesting because that was sort of mid to late 90s. And in Japan, the difficulty was that the law had just changed. You couldn't legally open a brewery for a long time in Japan unless you started with a ridiculous number of barrels. Like, you had to brew, you know, hundreds of thousands or a million barrels of beer to get a license. So you, like, day one had to be, you know, Sam Adams. And so finally that law changed, and they were able to bring, you know, small brewers were able to start up. But at the time, most of them were they were set up by regional governments as like a tourist trap. You know, like, come visit our traditional German, they're all like little German style breweries. And none of them were particularly authentic. And a lot of them were young Japanese men who were just sort of told that you were going to learn how to become a brewer.
German brewer.
Oh, yeah. And it was really interesting. Because there wasn't a lot of passion, it was pretty obvious. But then slowly, people with an interest in it really started opening up, and you started seeing, you know, the the Japanese breweries that we kind of recognize now. In fact, I think Brian Baird was at your festival this weekend. Is that right? Yeah, I'd met Brian just as I was leaving. He was kind of starting up, and met him briefly. But he's doing great work at this point. And there's some really interesting
beers. Beer scene in Japan has changed a lot.
Yeah, there needs to be a Blind Tiger in Tokyo. Yeah, when's that going down? Yeah.
Soon. My sister-in-law just moved there, so
okay, cool.
She's checking it out.
Sounds great.
But Dave, what was it like when you first started at Smolyanos?
Pretty
bad. What kind of beers were you making?
They were making awful beer, which is good for me because I knew I had a real future there. Because I came into Smutty Nose and they were struggling. This is 12 years ago now. But they had a great brand. I really liked the labels. I liked the whole concept. It was really solid. And I think a lot of the small breweries, certainly 10, 12 years ago, really struggled with that idea of branding, right? It was sort of a slap together label and clip art, that kind of thing was really typical back then. And Peter and Joanne were really good at that. They had a brewer who had kind of gotten a little beyond his ability. So it was a nice position for me to step into. I had just come out of the UC Davis program and had been brewing for a number of years before that, and it was a great opportunity. And in the 10 whatever years I've been there, we've just been really booming, and it's been a great, I've got a creative freedom, and we try to do as much creative work as we can. Obviously, it's with production issues, sometimes it's hard to schedule these things in, but it's been a phenomenal opportunity for me.
And now you guys are moving. I shouldn't say that because I said that last year, and we still haven't broken ground yet. But
I try not to get excited about this, but it's so close. I mean, we are within a month or so of in earnest getting this project going. So we're moving about 10 miles south of where we are now in the town of Hampton, New Hampshire. We own a 14-acre farm. It's called Toll Farm. We moved the farmhouse already, and that's going to turn into our pub. The barn's going to stay on location. We'll probably do events and things like that out of there. But a whole new facility, about 50,000 square feet. We'll do maybe 60 or 75,000 barrels out of it. We're really excited just to have sort of a, mostly a roof that doesn't leak, floors that drain, those things that just drive you crazy brewing in a warehouse like a lot of the Americans startups have done.
That tasting room that's in the machine shop.
Yeah, guys, whatever, grinding away, doing a little welding while you're getting a sample. It's people love it and they tell us they love it, but I don't know, I can't buy it. It's going to be great to have a real brewery, built with brewer's input into it, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Are all the recipes that Smutty Nose makes now, are they your recipes?
I think the Old Brown Dog is the only one at this point that hasn't been at least altered at some point by myself or, collaboration with staff. That was the only one that I kind of really kept. But when I started off, I didn't change anything. We just changed process, which... really in brewing is huge. The recipe, there's a certain amount to it, to the recipe, but, process is so much of what we do, and dialing that in made a huge difference on the beers as they were. And then we just kind of played around with things that we thought were out of balance. But that was sort of our four or five regular beers. And then all the big beers, I sort of changed those right away just because whatever I felt like it was, what Peter was giving me as an opportunity, I was going to help him, and he was going to give me the creative freedom to come up with my own opportunities there in those recipes. So.
Hey, we have a call-in question. Is someone on the air right now?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, who's this?
Oh, hi, this is Mike. I'm a first-time caller, a long time listener. I love the show.
Great. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Milwaukee.
All right. And,
yeah.
All right, cool. And what's your question?
I just heard my sister lives in the city, and she said there was, I'm a big Smutty Nose fan, and I heard that, I guess, the head brewer's on the show today. Is that right?
Yeah. Thank you for enjoying our beers. I appreciate that.
Yeah, totally. So I heard she's going to be able to go to this Blind Tiger or whatever bar that is doing a promo with you
or whatever.
And I heard about this mushroom porter or something.
We have a beer called Satchmo that we brewed last fall, We actually brewed it with wild foraged black trumpet mushrooms that a local chef to Portsmouth, Evan Mallett at the Black Trumpet restaurant, him and his staff went out and foraged for these mushrooms for us last fall. And we brewed it into it's sort of like an English brown porter, and we steeped these into the whirlpool. And the beer is really interesting. We'll see how it's kind of held up, because it wasn't a big beer. It's only about 5%, but we'll see how it's kind of held up. Hopefully it has, or I sort of owe Dave some money on the keg. But it's a really interesting beer, and it's certainly, I've heard of, I know Rogue did a beer with mushrooms, and I've heard of maybe a couple others, but I'd never played with them, and it turned out to be great. So hopefully your sister's in town, hopefully she can try it.
Cool. And Dave has the list of the other Smutty Nose beers that will be at Blind Tiger tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, some of the new stuff, I mean, you've got a Belgian stout, and I think you did that in a little Brett too, that Belgian stout. Is that right?
Yeah, we had that aged in barrels, and I think the Brett was maybe unintentional, but it may have transmitted.
Been in the wood.
Yeah, been in the wood. But, well, we'll see how that's aged as well. That should be great.
And then we've got a couple of casks and a pin. The casks are, I guess all three actually are dry hop. They're some of your styles, your regular styles, and you sort of played around with them.
Yeah, that's really Charlie Ireland does all my cask stuff for us now. And so we'll see what he's come up with. He's usually pretty heavy-handed with the hopping, so they'll probably be over the top. But I know one of them is our rye IPA.
Right, and that's new.
This is new, yeah. We've just packaged it. We've got some in 750s right now, just available at the brewery. This, I think, is the first of this rye IPA here in New York, and it's in this pan. And with some dry hops on top, it should be just gorgeous. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And now the Brett and I, you did that last year, and then you made another batch of it?
No, we haven't. Well, we did the original batch maybe 3 or 4 years ago. We like the name, but we changed the recipe entirely. So this was another version of a kettle sour beer. We did a beer called Rouge de Shire, which was like a sour raspberry beer. That was our first, sort of venture into kettle souring. So we're
Dave, what do you mean by kettle souring?
So we're mashing in and then running off into the kettle. So we collect wort into the kettle. And then we'll add lactobacillus into the kettle and keep that at about 100 degrees for, as long as it takes. It's usually about overnight, 12 hours, 18 hours, something like that. And the lactobacillus will create that lactic acid character, bring the pH down, and create that a sour quality to it. The beauty of it in the kettle is that you can then boil it, so you pasteurize it. So then I can run it through the rest of my processing equipment. So I get that that flavor I'm looking for without necessarily...
infecting the rest of the place.
Yeah, because we've got, 40 employees, and they're, with various states of mortgages and child payments and things. So, it's sort of hard to wing it when it comes to some of these bacteria. So this was a nice opportunity for us to play around with some sour quality, outside of some of the barrels that we're souring right now. But... I really like it. The Brett and I was just sort of a strong Belgian ale, and then it had that quality, and then we aged it in oak for about a year, and it's really beautiful. And the longer it ages, the more rounded that quality, that sour quality comes. So it should be tasting good.
And your farmhouse is one of my favorites, and I remember talking to you about that and being surprised when you said that it wasn't the beer that you intended. And that you still weren't, it still wasn't where you wanted it to be.
Yeah. The interesting part about brewing, like any, cooking or, brewing to me is really a culinary pursuit, is you never nail it right away. It always takes a few tries. But with our seasonal beers or these big beers, you only have one opportunity every year to do it. If I was in a brew pub, I may be able to, within, a few months, brew 4 or 5 times that same beer. So with this, it's sort of like, okay, it may take 5 years, and it's sort of at that point. Jen had a question.
I'm sorry, I have to reach over to get a mic. Question for you. I assume you don't have a pilot system now, but are you going to have one with the new brewery? Is that part of the plan?
Because Jen wants to use it.
Because I, of course, yeah, no. No, come I'm curious up. For you, because I think that's such a great opportunity sometimes to test, you know.
Yep. We do have a 15-gallon like homebrew setup that we tinker on, and we play around with that a little bit. But mostly, you know, I could do a half batch, basically 25 barrels, and we have some smaller fermenters, about, three of them. So that's kind of our pilot system. Yeah. You know,
but
I'm able to play
most of the time, you just jump right in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at this point, I'm not too worried about it.
That's good. You know, as long as you don't contaminate the entire system.
That's the stuff that I try. Yeah, that's the stuff that I try to avoid. But you know, if it's a recipe that I feel pretty comfortable with, we're not too worried about it. In 50 barrels at this point. Isn't that much volume. I mean, you know, Pat Fondil or our sales rep here in Manhattan would sell that in an afternoon. So, you know, at this point, that's not that hard to kind of try around or, you know, try new recipes at that scale. But it would be great to have, you know, I'd love to have like a 10-barrel system at the new facility.
And I will take you up on that offer sometime.
Yeah, come on up.
Yeah, I'll come brew with you.
That'd be great.
All right. Hey, and Ted, you just poured us a beer. What beer did you pour us? It's really good.
This is from a brewer from Lucca, Italy, Bruton. It's called Momus, and it's a Belgian style brown ale, about 7.5%. You know, the Italian beer, it's going to be you know, they're really worried about it. I mean, they're really concerned with pairing it well. So I thought coming to Roberta's here tonight, it'd be good to have something that goes with pizza and red sauces and that type of thing, and this pairs well with that.
And anything else from Top Ops we should note?
Well, we've got 20 draft beers that constantly rotate. We're gonna be celebrating the Belgian Independence Day in mid July, and we're gonna have 10 Belgian beers and 10 American style Belgian beers rotating. Well, I should say 10 taps and for each one, and we're gonna be rotating beers in and out all week.
So that means that you have the ability to try beer at the place too, because we've been referring to you as a bottle shop. But it's good to know if their beer's on tap and you can actually visit it like a bar.
Thank you for that. Yes, we're a bottle shop and tasting bar, so everything there is available both to stay and to go. So if you'd like to, you know, open a bottle and drink it at the bar, you're perfectly welcome. And if you'd like to take a growler home or a six pack home, perfectly welcome. We do flights and pints.
Well, so when are you opening up in Cologne?
That's in the 5-year plan.
Because these guys need you to open up there.
Definitely.
All right. Well, hey, we'll have you back too. We had so many guests tonight. Fry Guys, we had hoped for you guys to come, and you came.
Woo!
And Davey Arrington from Smutty Nose, this is a dream come true. Yeah, we'll be back, and definitely Ted, you'll be back. We'll probably do a growler show at some point, and then thank we can really much, talk, because I know you're doing a lot with growlers. We didn't even touch on that. There's one last question. A Twitter follower, Adam Nason, for the Shelton Brothers, for Joel. It said, will they distribute West Velitarian 12
Velitarian
to western part of U.S. in September?
We're not going to distribute unless you can pronounce it.
Well, you pronounce it, but I didn't even know you distributed at all.
Is that his pronunciation or yours?
That's me.
BR, am I correct in saying that we don't really know yet what's going on?
Well,
in the
do
west?
You distribute that beer at all?
Well, it's going to happen in the east.
I didn't even know
we
about.
Will. The problem is that there were going to be two importers. We would be doing it east of the Mississippi, and Mannequin Brussels would be doing it west, but they are no longer going to be doing it. So we're still in discussions with the monastery as to how that's going to happen. So for now, we're saying late September, early October.
But
for
what about the east side of the United States?
We'll definitely be available in very, very,
I was going to say, are they going to expand their brewing to be able to do that?
No, it's a one time, it's going to be a gift pack with 6 beers and 2 glasses. It's the West Vlaeteren 12 only. They've sent us, they'll be sending us a limited amount. It's 100% of the proceeds will be going. We're not taking any profits on this whatsoever, aside from obviously, you know, what it costs us to get it here.
And we're asking other people to
other
do the
people to do the same, because this chain is going to much needed renovations for the Abbey.
And when will these beers be available?
We're hoping late September or early October.
All right.
Good.
Jen, thumbs up on that?
I got my gift pack yesterday, actually.
Jen, you shouldn't have said that.
One of the benefits of attending the Shelton event was that you had access, if you could get yourself to Julio's, which is a great beer and liquor wine store up in Worcester, you could purchase one of these gift packs. So I got a ride, and I actually managed to get one. I'm excited.
Jen, do you have a Twitter handle?
I do, and yet I have as yet to figure out how to Twitter. So, yeah, Jen Schwartman, that's my name, and you can follow me, but there isn't much for me to say yet.
Not a lot to
You can
follow.
Teach me, Jimmy.
Well, at Jen Schwartman.
Jimmy wants right. to buy your gift pack, I think.
Well, you know, people are interested in this
Not
beer.
Not until he can pronounce it. Can you say that beer again?
We're running over, but let's hear. Why is this beer, this is another one of those cult beers. Why are people going nuts over this beer? Just because you can't get
because
it in the States?
Because they can't get it. Basically, but it is yeah. delicious. Yeah.
It is delicious.
But, it is
but
good.
But to say one beer is the best in the world is,
yeah.
is kind
yeah,
of
like
crazy.
Maybe I really want to get Fry Guys. That's
the
I
best
want.
Beer in the world.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
So we're gonna sign off. We're going to go to Spite and Dival tonight after this. And we're going to drink some Fry Guys on draft. And again, thank you, Dave Yarrington, man. You made our night. We're going to head over to a WD50 tonight, a real great New York City restaurant. Hang out with your buddy, Wiley Dufresne. And we're going to visit one of the new Good Beer Seal bars, Pine Box Rock Shop in Bushwick. Doesn't even know they're in the Good Beer Seal. We're going to go bring them the message and tell them they are a Good Beer Seal bar. And other events coming up. Well, it's July Good Beer Month is coming next Thursday. A bunch of us will get a proclamation from Mayor Bloomberg. There's a lot of great events. Check out goodbeerseal.com. Coming up right now, Sycamore's annual tailgate party, Saturday, June 20th. Sycamore, one of the new Good Beer Seal bars. Do you like Founders, Demonic Triple IPA, and Heavy Metal? Head out to the gate on Saturday, July 1st in Brooklyn. If you're not in Brooklyn, you're going to miss out, but it's an awesome place. And July 10th, Sunswick 3535. Come and celebrate Stout's Brewing's 25th birthday by meeting the owners. Carol Stout is awesome. She once made out with Ray Dieter. All right. And maybe you can make out with her, too. But I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com. Thanks so much. And thanks to Joel and BR from Shelton Brothers. Sebastian and Pita from Fry Guys. V. Gates, right? And Ted, David. We got Peter. Who's Ted? Ted from Top. Ted, what are you doing here, man? Top Hops. And David, Dave, and Jen for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson, who's out there in Seattle. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
The fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.